Well, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
It's not something I say very often. But you know, I tend to be a smart aleck, and I was in Wesco the other day. This little gal behind the counter goes, "Merry Christmas." And I said, "No, thanks. I have other plans." And she didn't quite know how to handle that one. I'm not a big fan of Christmas. I've never made much of a secret of that. December's the month that I like the least, and I'm always glad, like today, it's two-thirds gone. And one of the things I like to do is to demythologize Christmas just a little bit. You know, there's so many things that go on. I've got to adjust my camera here just a shade. There's so many things that go on with Christmas. I was on one of the social media channels this week, and I heard this thing about how when you say Xmas, the government is plotting to take Christ out of Christmas. It's those Democrats are at it again, and they're going to take Christ out of Christmas and make you suffer that way. So keep Christ in Christmas. I tell you what, folks, that frosts my flakes like nothing else when I hear that kind of stuff. Because that's not Xmas at all. Now, before you leave here today, one of my goals is that you know where Xmas comes from. And on the back of your bulletin, in the black highlight, is the word Christos. That's a very important word in the Greek language, in the Greek New Testament. That X up there is the ancestor of the English letter K. I've had 9 semesters of Greek, and I'm a total nerd about this stuff, but I want you to know it. That's the ancestor of the letter K, and it's pronounced K. And the thing that looks like a P is an R. The middle one, the Yoda, is obviously an I. The thing that looks like a cursive O is an S. The Greek language has a different letter if the S is in the middle of a word and at the end of the word. So then you got a tau, that's a T, and another O, and then an S at the end. That word is Christos, or Christ, translated into English. The early church did not have PowerPoints. You know, 200-300 A.D., they didn't have electricity. So what they would do is they started calling their gatherings masses, and they would post those on the doors of the church when the next mass was going to be. They'd write it on there. And so they would abbreviate, as you can imagine. The Christos Mass, or the Christ Mass, became the X Mass. And that is where it comes from. It's not a government conspiracy. It's a simple abbreviation that is 1,700 years old, and I want you all to know that so you can teach other people about it. And you'll have to pardon my intensity on that, but I hear it every year. Oh, yeah, they're trying to take Christ out of Christmas. No, they're not. It's the Greek word. Christos is where it comes from. All right, now we're going to do a little history. I've got a couple of cul-de-sacs I'm taking you down today of Sinterklaas. I like this too. The original St. Nicholas, kind of a cool guy. He was a leader in the church around the early 300s. He was at the First Council of Nicaea, and there was an argument going on. There was a dude named Arius, okay? And Arius believed that Jesus was a creature, not the creator, that God had created Jesus, and he was human just like us. That's how Arius was about. It's called the Arian controversy, and we have the Nicene Creed today just because of that. Well, St. Nicholas and Arius were apparently sitting next to each other and yelling at each other quite a bit about this controversy. And that's when Nicholas stood up and punched Arius in the face. So I just think that's an important part of church history that we all need to know. And then, after on a certain amount of time, he became canonized, which means he got the saint title. And St. Nicholas Day was December 6th. And still in the Netherlands to this day, it's December 6th, where they give out candy. And, you know, you set your wooden shoes out by the door and you put a carrot in his shoes so that the St. Nicholas's horse can eat the carrot, you know, and all that sort of thing. And you get little pieces of candy and all that. And that's considered feast day of St. Nicholas in the Netherlands and in Germany and various other places. Now, what they've left out, because it's not really politically correct, is Santa's helper, or St. Nicholas's helper. See, he would come and bring candy to the good kids, but what about the bad kids? He had a companion. His companion, in Dutch, is Zwarte Piet, or Black Peter. And what Black Peter would do is he carried his bag around, and if you were one of the naughty kids, he put you in that bag and hauled you off somewhere. And you can see the little boy's face in the sack there, in the excuse me, in the pictures. And that's the title, Me and the Zak. And that's what happens if you misbehave. Now, the Germans have a kind of an equivalent to this. They call it Krampus. And same thing, he's St. Nicholas's helper. He comes and picks up the naughty kids and takes them away. St. Nicholas gives secret gifts. Now, what happened was Sinterklaas is how it's pronounced in Dutch. But, you know, when the Dutch came to America in the 1600s, settled New Amsterdam, which is now New York, they were mostly Protestant. And Protestants don't like the whole saint thing. So they changed it, and eventually the pronunciation evolved into Santa Claus, and that's how that works. And I just want everybody to know that, so that, you know, this dude was actually a real person at one time. I want to do a little different take on Christmas this year, talk about how Jesus brings us gifts, how he brings us blessings. Christmas can be a celebration of gratitude, and that's probably what it is for most people. It's a celebration of gratitude, you know, except for those who've been raised by narcissistic parents, or those who've lost loved ones recently, those who are being rejected by loved ones, those who are missing parental approval. It's tough for people like that to celebrate. But Christmas can be a time of thanksgiving, a time of being grateful for all the blessings we have because of the one whose birth we celebrate. I want to take a look at the first few paragraphs of the Gospel of John today from the narrative lectionary. I want to put this biblical material in context because, you know, I am trying to make Bible scholars out of all of you. I want you to learn a lot about the Gospel of John because it does contain the Word of Life. And it's very important for us. So here's how it goes. In the beginning, the Word already existed. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. He existed in the beginning with God. So here again, you remember Arius said that Jesus was a creature, not co-eternal with God. And this argues that right there. And this passage is a lot older than Arius was. It's kind of hard to get around this. Now, the Hebrew and the Greek people believe that there was a force that created, and that force was in Hebrew, is wisdom. Okay, and in Greek, that kind of carried over, that wisdom was the creative force. And so the Greeks started calling the wisdom the Word, or Sophia was the Word. And the Word existed with God from all eternity. The Word was what did the creating. God created everything through him, and nothing was created except through him. The Word gave life to everything that was created, and his life brought light to everyone. See, again here, John's building up to say Jesus is the Word. And everything is created by the Word. He goes on, talks more about Jesus here. He says, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness can never extinguish it. There's always going to be that light breaking through. The devil cannot win. And then here, this passage, part of it. God sent a man, John the Baptist. Now, I just want to pause there for a second. You know, we really shouldn't call him John the Baptist. We should call him John the Baptizer. Because, you know, the Baptists, well, what happened was I went to a Southern Baptist church for about a half a year when I lived in Tulsa. And I remember somebody in the church saying, see, yeah, the Catholics think they were first, but they weren't. Look, in the Bible, it says John the Baptist. The Baptists were first. And I thought, oh, come on. I wasn't a very good Baptist. Okay, so God sent a man, John the Baptist, to tell about the light so that everyone might believe because of his testimony. John himself was not the light. He was simply a witness to tell about the light. The one who is the true light, who gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. So I think the purpose of this paragraph is to distinguish the difference between John the Baptizer and John the editor of this gospel. And I think that's what he's doing. It says that John the Baptist was the announcer of the arrival of the Messiah. He came into the very world he created, but the world didn't recognize him. He came to his own people, and even they rejected him. See, his mission was spiritual, but most people wanted a material Messiah. See, his kingdom is one level, and then there's the earthly level of kingdoms. He was the spiritual level, and they couldn't figure that out right away. But to all who believed him and accepted him, he gave the right to become children of God. They are reborn, not with a physical birth resulting from human passion or plan, but a birth that comes from God. See, being reborn is a major theme of this gospel. And it's not that complicated a thing. It's simply God connecting with your soul. And that makes all kinds of changes in your life. That's a good thing. Here's the verse that we all hear every once in a while. So the Word became human and made his home among us. He was full of unfailing love and faithfulness. That's one of the great mysteries of the Christian faith, that God could become human. You know, there's so many of these mysteries that challenge us. You know, like, this passage talks about Jesus being co-eternal with God. Can you comprehend eternity? That God has no beginning or no end? You know, it baffles me when I'd go to Salt Lake City and I'd look at the Rocky Mountains and I think, now, where did matter come from? Where did these rocks come from? You know, and I couldn't understand that. How is it that we can predict that December 21 today is the shortest day of the year, every year? You know, those things just are mysteries of the faith, and I've had to learn that there's some things I can't figure out. And there's enigmas that we just have to go with. I can't figure it out, but it's cool that it happened. Okay, we are going to go to the next one. John testified about him when he shouted to the crowds. This is the one I was talking about when I said, someone is coming after me who is far greater than I am, for he existed long before me. Again, I can't possibly understand that. I'm glad it's there, but I can't understand it. How John, you know, how this whole thing works. That Jesus existed long before him. That pre-existent theme just blows my mind. And, you know, they say that's how you frustrate a Hollander, is give him something he can't understand. He'll spend his whole life trying to figure it out. And I think that's probably true. All right, going on. This is a key verse here, I think the most important one in this passage. From his abundance, we have all received one gracious blessing after another. Again, this is another one of the major themes of the Gospel of John, that God is generous. He lets us be born twice. He owes us nothing. He doesn't owe us existence. He doesn't owe us this life, and he doesn't owe us the next life. But he gives them because he's generous. One gracious blessing after another. For the law was given through Moses, but God's unfailing love and faithfulness came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God, but the unique one, who is himself God, is near to the Father's heart. He has revealed God to us. See, this is another important teaching of the Gospel of John, that Jesus is God. To the Hebrew mind, to the Jewish mind of that day, the woman was just the soil in which the seed was planted, that all your genetic characteristics came from your father, none from your mother. Now, it's not accurate. We know better today, but that's how they thought back then. And so when the seed is planted in the woman, she becomes the pot that the seed grows in. I've learned to not call my wife my precious little flower pot. But, you know, you see that, and it was believed then that the son was the exact replica of the father. So when Jesus was proclaimed as the Son of God, it was believed that he was the exact replica of what God is really like. And that's just important for us to understand. See, the Old Testament didn't always present a clear picture of who God is. The authors of the Old Testament used anthropomorphisms, where they assigned human characteristics to God that were not really God's characteristics. And so there's sometimes a distorted picture of God that we have. But Jesus is the exact picture of who God is. And that's what we need to remember as we think about him. That's called cruciform theology, where you look at everything in the Bible as if you're Jesus hanging on a cross. And that's how you imagine, that's how you see what God is really like. The God who dies for us. And that's what this gospel is about. I think this gospel lends us to a revolution of gratitude. You know, it starts off by talking about existence. Existence is a gift. And all the accoutrements of existence are gifts too. Relationships are gifts. The ability to make a living is a gift. It's a blessing. Everything we have and experience are gifts. They are blessings. Each day is a gift. Now, I tend to be an angry pessimist by nature. I'm like the dog that got picked on as a puppy. I like to bite. Sometimes I can be nasty that way. It's just my nature. And if I want to change that to become a grateful optimist, I have to do it by faith. But you know, life is much better, and you realize it's a gift. That everything about it is a gift. And you can appreciate that more if you go visit somebody in a hospice house. You can see from their perspective what life is and what it isn't. It's kind of a cool thing. But I tend to whine. You know, one of the most disgusting things about Christmas is the shopping. You agree with that? Yeah, I can't stand shopping either. You know, and my wife likes to shop at Blaine's Farm and Fleet in Holland. And I don't mind that store. I like that store. It's got lots of cool toys in it, you know. But we had to go there Monday night. Place is packed, and I'm dreading it. And I said, oh, do we have to stop by Jamie's house too, you know? She's just down the road from Blaine's. No, we didn't have to do that. She was working, so okay. And we get out of that store, and I think, oh, good, I can finally just go home. It's about 35 minutes to home from there. But I was kind of hungry. And so we decided to go to this little restaurant in Zeeland, just a few miles over. And this is what we had, or what I had. This little restaurant in Zeeland makes their own pig in the blankets. I can't turn that down. Now, these were pretty good, not near as good as mine, but not bad either, you know. And I thought about that. I was sitting there thinking, you know, I've got food to eat. I've got someone to eat it with. So I said to myself, now quit whining and enjoy the abundance of blessings that God has given. Because he didn't owe me anything. From his abundance, we have all received one gracious blessing after another. Now, this kind of thinking, this gratitude thinking, which I'm going to call a revolution of gratitude, gives you things. Today I want to think of three main things that happen when you are a grateful optimist rather than an angry pessimist. And one is you enjoy stuff more. You know, you can enjoy a snowstorm instead of moaning and groaning about it. I've learned it's kind of fun to blow snow. I understand that's a mental illness. But, you know, a few years back, I bought myself a really nice snowblower, and I actually enjoy blowing snow, and I'm grateful to have a warm house to go into when I'm done. So that's one of the things about a grateful attitude. You enjoy stuff more. Secondly, other people enjoy being around you more. Nobody likes being around a Grinch or a Grouch. You want to go out to lunch with somebody who's going to complain the whole time? I don't think so. And a grateful optimist is just more fun. You know, a few years back, I went to a General Synod meeting in Pella, Iowa, and the food was awful. Sorry, any Pellaites that are listening, but whoever you had catering that was. So in the morning, I would walk to McDonald's, you know, get an Egg McMuffin. After the first session was out, I'd wait, and then but then I was starving, so I had to go to McDonald's. Or I didn't have to, but I did. It was about four blocks away. It was on the campus of Central College is where we were meeting. And anyway, I get to the McDonald's in Pella about 10 o'clock, and it's just like every other McDonald's in the United States. There's a few people in there, and then there's a table full of angry old men complaining about the government. Just like if you walked in the one in North Muskegon at 10 o'clock in the morning, or the one in Norton Shores at 10 o'clock in the morning, every McDonald's has what the Dutch would call brompots. Angry old men complaining about the government, they're complaining about their wives, they're complaining about their kids. And lately, McDonald's prices. So I was in this McDonald's the other day and over listening to this conversation, thinking I should say something, but then I thought, no, I'm just going to get out of here. And I came back here, and they were setting up for hand-to-hand. And it was a completely positive experience. It's such a difference. Guess where I'd rather hang out, you know? All they need to do is start serving Egg McMuffins with hand-to-hand. But the thing is, you know, you become, well, other people just are going to like being around you more. And then the third one is you become part of the blessings other people receive. When you realize your blessings, you want to share them with other people. You're prone to do that. You want to make the world a better place. You want to fix stuff. God turns you into a vessel of blessings. And then your life becomes deeper and more fulfilling. And who doesn't want that? Pray with me, please. Lord, we give you thanks for everything. And we realize that you must look down on us sometimes. Think what a bunch of whiny brats I've made. So turn us around and let us see the great gifts that you give us every day. Amen.